Welcome into the Pirate Preview right here on the Sports Objective, our great show that you can hear, obviously, if you're listening to our podcast, you're watching us on Facebook Live, of course, our YouTube channel. And Bubba, we're so excited. We've got a, I always said a lot, Kyle gets on me, but tonight we really do have a big show.
Yeah, I'm trying to think back if this was Sunday or Monday, whenever we got the news that Jay was going to be on the call with the ESPN Plus broadcast. Monday. On Saturday for the Tulane game. I'm very excited, and we were planning on having him on anyway, but that sealed the deal. And welcome back in, former Pirate tight end, Jay Sonhalter.
Thanks, guys, so much. It's going to be awesome. Awesome game Saturday, East Carolina and Tulane. They really played their best games of the season last week. Both of them did. So it's going to be a really good game Saturday. I'm excited to be on the call.
Well, I'm happy for your broadcast career, but I'm upset because it messed up my plans. I was going to try to talk to Coach Houston to sneak you in for some plays at tight end so we could get Rajay Harris and the running game really going. Maybe we could get the – once we got it going, then you could go back. But you can only be at one place at one time, so that plan is not going to work out too well for me.
Yeah, I'll be in the air conditioner, but playing for any team is always fun, but I guess I'm too old now, but I appreciate the effort.
Before we talk about the game too, let's get an injury report. How are the ligaments doing? Last time we had, I know that you've been able to, thankfully, like a lot of Americans, I was reading the stat, I was telling you pre-show, well over 50%, I think it was 64%, a huge number that we're working for at home. And so I'm glad that you've been able to work at home. How are you doing? How's the recovery? Are you riding the bike? I know you're probably doing like 5 hours a day rehab.
Yeah, I'm feeling so much better. I'm about to kind of get off crutches here soon.
Cool.
I got hurt originally July 4th, so it's been a long process, but honestly, it's a blessing because, you know, it slows you down and makes you realize all the things you're lucky and blessed to have. So I view it as a positive thing, but you know, just doing the best to get healthy. But I appreciate you guys always supporting my rehab efforts.
Yeah, absolutely. We want to make sure that we tell the administration again, you and Corey Glore can do a lot of those. Whenever we have the Olympic sports back, it's been crazy nuts with COVID. Guys, yesterday they had the biggest, I don't know if you guys saw this. We're not going to spend a lot of time on it because we love to talk COVID-19 on our show, but it affects sports so much. We'll be talking about crowd size, I'm sure, a few times here today, tonight. But 104,000 cases is the biggest one single day ever for Corona as far as COVID-19 in the United States. Crazy stuff. And people, please, if you love pirate sports like we do, and I know we have a huge fan base, please do not have huge holiday gatherings. There's a reason. There is a, you know, people use that politically, that the word science, but I will tell you, there's something to the science because every time we have huge crowds, we have big clusters. And unfortunately, guys, I think it's I'll seg out of that by saying that I hate for Jay's great appearance on ESPN Plus that we don't have the 50,000 rocking. And I said it a couple of days ago. I really believe that we would have about 40,000 people there based on the fact. And I think Kyle said it. You did, Bubba. We would have a decent crowd there here for Saturday. The Pirates are playing so much better. The program is on certainly on the climbing every rung of the ladder, so to speak. And you guys with Tulane, this is a game to me that's I hate using the term 50-50, but I really believe this is a winnable game. I know Tulane feels the same way about East Carolina, but this is not the East Carolina under Scotty Montgomery, okay? And we almost won in 17 at that cold night. But how do you guys feel? I'll start with you, Bubba. How are you feeling about the game? And then we'll get to our guest, Jay Sonhalter.
I think it'll be a fairly high-scoring game. I don't think it's going to be anything crazy, you know, like Ruff's debut where it was 51-49 or something along those lines. But I do think it's a game that will probably be played in the 30s. You look at Tulane prior to the 38-3 victory over Temple. Those guys had put up at least, I think it was 30 or 31 points plus in their three losses against Houston, UCF, and SMU, overtime loss to SMU in New Orleans. So they definitely can score. Excellent freshman quarterback, which we'll talk about here in a minute with Jay. Yeah. because I know he's seen plenty of film on him. And then also I talked to Coach Fritz about him earlier in the week. But I think it's a game that if we are clicking on all cylinders like we did against Tulsa offensively and just take care of the football, don't have those three miscues, and maybe play a little bit better in the red zone, I think it's a game that I like our chances of winning. I really think the Pirates are going to come out victorious. And I know we'll talk more as far as a specific prediction later on.
Well, for both teams, you know, like I said, really coming off the best performance of the year for both sides. East Carolina, devastating, you know, call there that didn't go their way, but they played really well. And then Tulane dominated Temple. And, you know, both sides are really coming on. And Tulane, 3-4 right now, if they can win this, you know, get them to 500. And then for East Carolina, an important game just to kind of see how the team responds from last week. And you know, there's a lot of young players on both sides that are really, really good players. So it'll be fun to watch, you know, the young talent.
No doubt. In fact, Jay, one of the things that I'm concerned about, I want to get your opinion and Bubba's. I was thinking about this, knowing you were going to be on, and we have Bubba and maybe Kyle from LaGrange later on. We'll see if Kyle will come in here in a little bit. But what worries me, and I'll get your feeling, and no disrespect to our offensive line, but what worries me, we need the running game, Rajee Harris. We got it rocking, and I love Coach Schenkweiler, but the matchup of the offensive line of East Carolina versus
Dave, I'm sorry to interrupt. You need to backtrack. Rajee Harris.
I said Rajee.
I'm sorry. It sounded like Rajee.
No. I saw that Twitter video, and I have there's some days I practice for hours, but Rajee Harris, yeah. No, there's some people that I'm still here to see Rajee, and I was like, oh, man.
I apologize, you know, and I stand corrected.
No, it's okay. I love Rajee Harris, but my biggest concern is the, and I want to get your take, Bubba and Jay, the offensive line. I know that the defensive line of Tulane is bigger, and they have a lot of great athletes on the line. But you know what? I think the offensive line of East Carolina has been playing better. I think they're getting a lot more confidence. I think they've had a chance to play together more. And I guess I'm not sure about the injuries for this week for offensive line, but that's my biggest concern for the whole ball game. Everything else, to be honest, I feel very good about. What do you guys think?
Well, I think for both teams, the line play that's going to be the key in the ball game, because East Carolina wants to run the ball and have balance. And the strength of Tulane's defense is the defensive line. So it's going to be a battle up there. You know, can Tulane's defensive line stop the run, or is East Carolina going to have the ability to run the ball and create play action passes? On the other side, East Carolina is blitzing a lot and doing a lot of different stunts. Can they get to the freshman quarterback, or can Tulane protect up front and allow him time to throw the ball, because he's got a really strong arm and talented wide receivers on the outside? So I think the battle of the trenches in any game is important, but especially this game.
Yeah, taking a look at the matchup, that's something that Kyle and I, as well as Dave, had discussed, how good they are in the front seven. You know, Rajee has had his three consecutive 100-plus yard games, right around 120 against Tulsa and USF, with that game against Navy in between where he had 175 or so. But I think this will be probably more like the Tulsa game if we can get 125 to 150 yards rushing, and, you know, just enough to have a threat there, a serious threat, where we can run the ball if we need to in short yardage situations, but then also make the play action pass more effective, because we know Holton is so effective when Rajee has done what he's done the last three games.
No question about it. In fact, guys, with the Bubba, help me out on this. Let's see. So this would be if I'm, my memory serves me right, is this the third straight game, or the will be the fourth straight game? Rajee Harris with 100 yards, a third.
This would be fourth.
This it would be fourth because he did with Georgia State, yeah. Right?
No. Okay, one double. This would be the fourth, and he has three currently: USF, then Navy, and then Tulsa.
That's why I'm going crazy. Yeah, that's why I'm trying to get my head. So yeah, so this will be the fourth one, and 400 yards or four straight 100. When's the last time we had that Cooper? I know for two was Cooper, but I don't know he had four straight. Did he?
I'm not sure. That's a good question. I'd have to delve into the fact book.
That was one of the questions I want to ask you guys because I didn't know the answer to it. And Bubba's our numbers guy, Jay. So, you know, like we need to have a – like the election stuff, we need to have a big board that we have Bubba at because he's so good with stats. And that was one of the – that was one of the things that I was curious about because, Jay, one of the things that I'm really happy about is certainly the running game. That's been great. Another thing that the one thing that I will say is that the more, which is obvious, is the more that we can have the running game, Holton Ahlers won't be trying to. I think sometimes he tries. He puts way too much pressure on himself and puts too much on him trying to make a play. He is a playmaker, and he has a lot of talent. But if you want the – I think the scouting report would be for Tulane is to stop the run and make Holton Ahlers try to make these incredible plays because that's when things can go bad. For the Pirates.
Well, I just think, you know, for any quarterback, you know, for the Pirates on Saturday, they've got to have balance because when you have a running game and when you're playing, you know, when you're out on the field. So like when I used to play as a tight end, if you have a running game, it makes running a route so much easier because the linebackers are coming up. They're respecting the run, especially on play action pass, and it creates voids in the defense. So it's imperative. You know, on both sides, really. I mean, on both teams, but for East Carolina to have the running game because that's going to open up the passing attack and you know, a lot of depth at the wide receiver position for ECU. And, you know, it gets everybody in a rhythm as well.
No question about it. When you look at one of the things that Coach Hall said about, I thought was really cool about Blake Harrell's defense for Tulane's offensive coordinator, the very fact that he compared East Carolina's defense to Navy. I thought that was a huge compliment. I think Blake Harrell, I had another guy say that to me today, that he really loves Pirate fan and graduate. He told me earlier tonight that he feels like, he said, how excited are you about the defense? And I said, I'm very excited about the defense. For me personally, the style that they're playing now, Jay, it looks like, and I asked Coach that last night with the coordinator report, they really look like they're having fun. And I think when you're having fun, I know that Coach Donnie Kirkpatrick talked about there's guys on the football team now that love to play football. And the ones that don't like football, they're not going to be on the team much longer or they're not on the team anymore. And so you look at a situation now with when you have Blake Harrell with that defense. The one thing that bothers me is when you don't have aggressive play. And I always joke that if they want to watch the game, they can come up with me in section two and get it and buy a ticket.
Yeah, I mean, you know, football is a game of emotion and it's meant to be played, you know, at a high level, but with a lot of intensity and to have fun. And you know, I saw a video, you know, it was on NFL Network of Bill Belichick, and he was like in a team meeting with the Patriots, and he was showing them, he was like going over film and when they celebrated, when they played well, you know, with intensity and they were having fun, how successful they were. And he was just kind of showing kind of like after they scored a touchdown, certain situations where nobody would really celebrate and then other situations where everybody would celebrate. And, you know, how does that correlate though, you know, to the college game or any level? It's, you know, when you're out there having fun, playing really hard, but having a high intensity, but having fun, it's infectious and contagious, and it, you know, really allows you to play better. So it's huge.
And Jay, one of the big topics that's been discussed this week is obviously what transpired last Friday night out at Tulsa, and the Pirates being the victim of some bad officiating. We certainly could have done some more ourselves to not allow the officials to have it in their hands, but nonetheless, you can't put any lipstick on that pig for sure. And so just as a former player, just talk about, I was just thinking back to the years when you were playing, I was trying to think of the closest thing I could that would parallel that situation. And, you know, bouncing back from a disappointing loss like that, especially one where you felt like you were on the short end because of something outside of your control.
Well, it's tough. And, you know, I mean, whenever there's calls that maybe go against you or you feel like should have been called or whatever the situation may be, it's really tough. And you know, for East Carolina, that was tough circumstance last week, but it's all about how do you respond from that? How do you get up from that? You know, the conference came out, made the statement, and, you know, it's good for that recognition, but it's not going to change anything. But what that experience can do is affect you, you know, either positively or negatively. And for East Carolina, they have to use that as motivation. You know, they have to use that as, you know, an adversity situation where they learn how to get, you know, get up from that and get back to the grind. And I think it's an important game, you know, for both teams for a lot of reasons on Saturday. But for East Carolina, you know, just another response for them from that game last Friday.
Now, welcome in the third member of the crew, Kyle Barber. Kyle, how are you?
What's going on, Bubba? Your volume's very low on my end. Can you guys hear me okay?
Yeah, we can hear you fine. How's it going, man?
It's going, dude. It's going. Had to get something done before the show, so I got it done. And and I'm joining you guys.
Yeah, we know all about that. And well, it's a family show, so we'll pirate preview here. We're talking ECU Tulane Saturday high noon. Kyle, you're going to be working around the house, doing some yard work. I take it at high noon on Saturday.
No, unfortunately, it looks like I'll be at home unless Bubba's found out something and hadn't told me. But as far as I know, I'll be at home. But I'll be watching the game and hopefully getting celebrating. Oh, about 3:30, a much needed win, because guys, after the last two games against Tulsa, we all know what happened, and against Navy, we desperately need to win this football game. I mean, it's certainly nothing's a must win. It's a weird season, but these guys deserve a win. How about that? How about not a must win? This is a deserved win.
No question about it. And well, by the way, guys, I forgot to look this afternoon. I was going to. What's the line on the game as of today? Do you guys know?
Last I think it was 5. What is it now, Bubba? Do you know?
It's going up.
It is 5, yeah. It opened at, what, 3? It opened at 3 or 3.5 or something like that, and now it's 5.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Go
figure.
Yeah, I don't see that. Maybe I'm missing something, but not disrespecting Tulane at all, but I think it's going to be much.
Well, you know, one thing I wonder with how aggressive we are on defense and the way they play offense, I wonder with their ability to run the ball, if that will kind of keep our aggression in tow. I'm curious about that. I think this game could be more high scoring on both sides than what people probably think it's going to be. It wouldn't surprise me to see this game. You know, the Tulsa game was more high scoring on both sides than I think most people thought. And I think this could be the same way. I wouldn't be surprised if both teams are in the middle 30s.
Yeah, Kyle, right before you joined, we actually were discussing that and how, you know, Tulane, even in their three losses against UCF, Houston, and then the overtime loss against SMU, they scored 30-plus in each of those. And then, obviously, last week against Temple, 38-3. So, I agree with you. I could see this being, a 38-31, 41-34 or something like that.
I'm predicting overtime.
Overtime.
I'm predicting overtime.
Overtime.
I've seen a lot of East Carolina Tulane games go to overtime, and unfortunately, they have not fallen our way. But I wouldn't be surprised to see another one go to overtime. And damn it, we're due. I hate that. I hate when people say we're due. It's the stupidest sounding thing in the world to me. But we are due. We're due for some luck to fall our way. Knock on wood.
Oh. Speaking of which, I was talking to the guys before the show, but I want to get you guys on the air to how do you not to bring up the subject, but if, as far as officiating goes, how do you think the officials will call this game on Saturday at lunchtime at noon?
I would think they'd be on their P's and Q's and make sure they call a fair game. You know, I'd like to say we get some makeup calls, although Tulane did nothing to deserve.
Right, right. I
understand them, but I'd like to see them call a good game. And if any calls are, if there's a replay and you're not quite sure if it should go the Pirates' way, maybe throw it our way. You know.
I mean, I was telling Jay beforehand. I don't think Bubba. I don't know if Bubba heard me, but. Pre-show, the very fact that, could you imagine, not that I want it to happen, but Coach Houston will lose his mind if they have two games in a row like what we experienced last Friday night and again on Saturday. I really find it really hard to believe that that would happen again.
If it happens two games in a row, you know something's up. Hey, Jay, I'm sure it's been talked about. How fired up are you, man? Get to call the game Saturday.
Yeah, it's such a great opportunity, and I'm just so excited, you know, to be on the broadcast. And both teams, you know, like you said, it's such an important game for East Carolina and Tulane. Tulane 3-4, they can, you know, if they win, they go to 500. And for East Carolina, they've been playing so much better here the past couple weeks. So it's really important on both sides. But I'm very, very humbled to be on the broadcast. So
who's your broadcast partner?
Evan Lepler will be play-by-play.
He's the guy that Kyle with, you know, with Nate Ross, a lot of the basketball games year before last. Yeah. Evan does a good job. And I think, does he do a lot of, was it Charleston or Coastal Carolina? Or he has done some, hasn't he, in South Carolina last year or two?
He probably has. I know, you know, Nate Ross is based out of
Charleston, right?
that general area, But yeah, I know Evan has done a lot of our games.
Jay, how hard is it going to be to non-partial?
Oh, I remove myself from the situation. I am just a broadcaster, so wow.
Would you been able to have stayed neutral Friday night?
Friday night, yeah. I mean, you just see what you say what you see. So if Tulane's doing something, I'll you know, explain it or share it. Same with East Carolina.
Yeah, but in a situation like what happened Friday night with the officials, you wouldn't have lost it.
Oh well, I mean, you say the truth. Yeah, I mean, you say what happens. Yeah, yeah. I mean, but that's what I mean. Like, you know, something like that happens. Yeah. You got to say it.
Yeah. Oh yeah, I would have said it, and I would have said it with some nice verbiage. You go. I don't know, man. I'm telling you. I hats off to you. I don't think I could stay neutral calling a game, not East Carolina game. Look at anybody else's, particularly with like what happened Friday night. I'd be like, this is some bullshit.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, that's exactly what we want on ESPN Plus. Jay's, I think you should actually sit in with Jay on the broadcast. What do you think,
what?
Jay,
you know, and Evan Lepler? I bet you if Jay did that, he would be you would be all over the place. He'd make highlight reels. It would actually boost your career.
No, I don't think so.
I don't know how to say cuss. I don't know any cuss words though, so I've got to clean
it. Don't.
Yeah, I've never said anything.
After the show, give me a call.
Okay.
All right. Sounds good. I was just reading your thanks. That's awesome. A great line there. Bubba just sent me. Do you want to go to an interview now that we had pre-recorded from yesterday?
Yeah, we can.
All right. Let's do that. We have our next guest. We'll come back with Kyle and Jay on the other side. We've got some roundtable topics, but Bubba, I'll throw it to you.
Yeah, on Wednesday afternoon, we caught up with Andrew Allegretta, the play-by-play voice of the Tulane Green Wave, and let's go to that with Andrew right now.
Well, there's a big game on Saturday, and some Pirates fans, 3,500, will get a chance to watch the game. And, Bubba, I know we've got a very special guest now.
Yeah, with the Pirates taking on Green Wave, like you said, 12 o'clock at Dowdy Ficklin Stadium. Welcome again, the play-by-play voice for Tulane, Andrew Allegretta. Andrew, welcome back into the show.
It's good to be back. I think this is, what, the third appearance? I have fun with you guys.
Yeah, you're awesome. I think we were one of the things we've been talking about with the game, Andrew, is we're really proud of the League of the American and how the bottom of the league has really, really improved, like with Tulane, for example, with Willie Fritz, with a new stadium, and you have a lot of things going. We've talked to you about that before, and Tulane is a program that's really on the rise.
You know, I think Coach Fritz has done an excellent job. I've probably said this to you guys before. I think he's one of the elite program builders in the entire country. He may not get the recognition because he has not worked at a quote-unquote Power 5 school. He has sort of climbed the ranks in the same way that Coach Houston has climbed the ranks. But Coach Fritz has done an incredible job at a program that, you know, quite frankly, whether Tulane fans want to really think about it and talk about it, it's a difficult place to be successful for a long period of time. And Coach Fritz has done a great job. And it's also nice with the way that Coach Houston has started to turn that program around. It's good to see that the entire American Conference is, you know, it's a short history, so it's easy to poke holes at the American guys. But it is nice to see the American start to get some recognition nationally as truly the skilled conference that it is.
Kind of expanding on that a little bit, Andrew, this is going off memory, but I'm pretty sure prior to Willie Fritz, Tulane had not been to back-to-back bowl games, and they had their first back-to-back winning seasons in quite some time as well.
Yeah, so Tulane had not gone to back-to-back bowl games since 1979 and 1980, and Tulane had never won back-to-back bowl games, which it has now done. It's also shooting to have three consecutive winning seasons for the first time in 40 years. So I guess that's what I'm getting at. There's a lot of really proud history at Tulane, especially if you go back to the SEC days, or you can talk about 1998 with Sean King and going undefeated. You can talk about Mack Brown coaching here. There are proud moments, but in terms of sustained success, that hasn't happened. And Coach Fritz has, at least so far, brought that to Uptown New Orleans.
Andrew, what was the biggest thing that he tried to instill culture-wise when he came in to really flip the switch and get things going in the right direction?
He's just going to put his hard hat on, so to speak, and he's going to go to work every single week. And I think that sort of mindset has trickled down throughout the program. It's a program that has needed consistency. It has needed the time to build and grow and develop, to plant the proverbial seeds and then watch them grow. And I think the consistency with which he does his work now in his fifth season, you're starting to see it pay off, especially the past two seasons. Look, at 3-4 this season, that's not where Tulane wants to be. That's not where Coach Fritz wants to be. But in terms of being consistently competitive and making noise in this particular conference, a much more challenging conference than Conference USA or the past conferences for Tulane, I think that is the result of just the consistency and the steady hand that Coach Fritz brings.
You know, last week, Andrew, you guys snapped a three-game losing streak, 38-3 victory over the Temple Owls there in New Orleans. So just talk about how nice it was after three very difficult games against the Houston Cougars, SMU, which is an overtime loss in New Orleans, and then at UCF in consecutive weeks, what it was like to win so big against Temple, even if they did, or even if they were missing, their starting quarterback.
That's the gauntlet, right? It's everybody but Cincinnati. It's everybody but Memphis. To go through Houston, UCF, and SMU in three consecutive weeks, that's awfully difficult. And the truth of the matter, guys, is styles make fights. And the style matchups with Houston, SMU, and UCF, they're difficult for anybody, but they're especially difficult for Tulane. The weakness of Tulane's team this season is the back end of its defense. It is a inexperienced secondary. They have a couple of upper class pieces, but not a lot of depth when it comes to experience in the secondary. So if you get a Shane Bouchel, Clayton Toon, and Dylan Gabriel, they can throw it around the yard on anybody, and especially on Tulane. Now you get a Temple team that is missing its starting quarterback. It's a more physical-minded team to begin with. It's not a high-volume passing attack like those other two. The style is just so much better, and Tulane absolutely took advantage of it. And you talk about a load coming off the shoulders of Coach Fritz in this program. We knew the back half of the schedule was going to be more quote-unquote manageable, not easy, but manageable. And they did exactly what they needed to do to try to make a run in the back half of the season.
Andrew, one of the things that's nice is, of course, recently in the last few weeks, they've gotten rid of the win totals as far as how many wins you have to be eligible for a bowl, be 500. And you guys are sitting pretty right now, 3-4 with a handful of games left. You guys could definitely make yourself make a mark, so to speak, and go to a bowl again.
I think so for sure. When it comes to East Carolina coming up, you've got Army, you've got Tulsa, and then Memphis. Again, I'll go back to it. You talk about it all the time in college basketball, right? Like, who is your path to the Final Four? Do your styles match up with whatever seed you happen to be going up against? I don't think that East Carolina, Army, and Tulsa are going to be easy by any stretch for this Tulane team, but the styles are just way more manageable. Does Tulane want to go to a bowl game with a 4-7 record? No. 5-6 record? No. But if you can win a couple of football games and you can get to the finish line at 6-5, especially after going through a tough slog against Houston, SMU, and UCF, I think you feel like you're a team that's worthy of a bowl game appearance.
And that's one of those things. And this year, like you're saying, I wholeheartedly agree. In most years, you know, 3, 4, 5 wins, absolutely not. But it would be interesting to know what a lot of these coaches are thinking, particularly at certain schools, in terms of, you know, getting that extra 15 practices, whether they will take it on financially. That's one piece we haven't even mentioned. And then also just to reap the benefit of those 15 additional practices, particularly if they have a young football team like East Carolina.
For Tulane's perspective, guys, I think Coach Fritz would take it 10 times out of 10. If it's 5-6, I think they'd take it 10 times out of 10. Quite frankly, he might even take it if it's 4-7, 10 times out of 10. You're talking about a guy that wants this program to play as many football games as possible, wants to be able to showcase its style, its people to its recruits as much as possible, and you want those 15 extra practices. I think Coach Fritz would take it. Now, you're starting to get into a conversation about, you know, is it really 3 consecutive bowl games? If you make one at 4-7, whatever. I don't know. I guess that's a conversation to have down the stretch. But if you're Tulane, I think you think, let's try to get to 6-5 and feel like we've earned our way into a bowl game.
Andrew, when you look at this game and you look at the strengths on both sides for both teams, you know, there's definitely some sides for East Carolina that's been playing really well on the offensive side and on the defensive side for Tulane. And Tulane's defensive line is really good. But you flip it to the other side, how do you think Pratt's protection has been with his offensive line, and how do you foresee that going against the East Carolina defense that likes to blitz a lot?
Yeah, it's a good question. I talked with Will Hault, the offensive coordinator, about that earlier today. We're recording this, guys, on, Wednesday. So I talked to him on Wednesday's practice about it. He compared East Carolina's defense to the Navy defense that liked to blitz a lot. And that gave Tulane a ton of problems in the second half. It's a big reason Tulane let a 24-0 lead go in the second half. I guess the plus from the Waves' perspective is that you've seen it and you should have a better sense. Now, the offensive line has taken some significant body blows throughout the past couple of weeks. There was a freshman right guard that had been playing by the name of Josh Remetich. Outstanding. He got mono, guys. He's out. Like, it is what it is. Joey Claybrook, who is starting at left tackle, he got banged up. He should be able to go. He played a little bit against Temple. He should be able to come back. They had a backup guard in Caleb Thomas, who got hurt last week. That offensive line has just kind of rotated bodies throughout the course of the season. It's also part of the reason the running game has slowed down. The offensive line getting hurt a little bit, and Tajay Spears, the best running back, tearing his ACL against Southern Miss. So the offensive line has been a patchwork, but I will say it has been better as of late, specifically the game against Temple. And I think the advantage of seeing a blitzing style team like Navy earlier should give those guys a reference point. You want to hold up for Michael Pratt, because if he's got an extra second, he can throw it down the field. I think, Jay, that's a really good point. And if you had to circle kind of a matchup this week to follow, that certainly could be it. How well does the blitzing of East Carolina get home to Michael Pratt? Because if it gets home, well, then it's a problem for Tulane. But I think I could say the reverse, too. If Tulane's blitzes get home to Holton Ahlers, well, then good luck to the Pirates as well.
Yeah, how do you, just on the other side, how do you view the defensive line in the front seven for Tulane? Because I know there's a lot of big names there.
The front seven is the strength of that defense for sure, and the defensive line is certainly the strength of the defense. It's kind of interesting to me that over the past handful of games, East Carolina has tried to place a premium on running the football, which from a Tulane perspective, I would say, okay, that's fine. Go for it. Because our weakness are, you know, Dylan Gabriel and Shane Bouchel throwing it 30 yards downfield and us missing a couple of tackles, and all of a sudden a 20-yard gain becomes 60 or 70. So I think that would help Tulane. It doesn't mean that East Carolina is not going to score points. It's going to score points. It's just, if you're going to focus on running the football, I would think that that behooves the Green Wave to some extent in this ballgame.
Yeah, that's an excellent point, Andrew. I think this could be very much because of what you're saying about the strength of Tulane defense being in the front seven, kind of like the Tulsa game last week. Knew probably going into that game it wasn't going to be like a couple of games or maybe even three games this year where the Pirates had run for in excess of 200 yards. But last week we had some success. Rajay Harris had his third consecutive 100-yard game. What a freshman campaign he's having. But I think for the team, we had about 130 yards rushing, 125, 130 yards, but ran it enough to give Holton in the passing game, time to operate. So I think that's going to be the key this week, to not necessarily have a ton of yards, but run it well enough so that the passing game can go to work.
You know, and someone else made the point to me about the way that East Carolina throws the football. Obviously, you guys can go vertical and stretch the field, but there's also a lot of working the passing game horizontally, which I think benefits Tulane as well, because that includes the linebackers and the tackling process. Nick Anderson, Dorian Williams, Kevin Henry, Marvin Moody, they can tackle. The problem has been the secondary tackling. If you get out to that third level, I guess, with Chase Kirshen needing to make an open field tackle, or Larry Brooks or Macon Clark or one of the cornerbacks, we've seen busted plays go from 20 to 70 yards. None of this is to say that I think Tulane is going to stop East Carolina. It feels like the matchup isn't quite as daunting as it would be against UCF or SMU or Houston. Again, East Carolina could easily put up 40 points in this ballgame, for sure. But stylistically, I think from a Tulane perspective, there's a little bit more optimism that you can have some good moments.
Case in point, Andrew, as far as what you're talking about with the passing game, a lot of times being horizontal, Tyler Snead against Tulsa had 16 receptions for 108 yards. So right there between 6.5 and 7 yards per reception, you know, a lot of shallow crossers, flat routes, having a guy running a slant, or not even truly running a slant, but kind of creating a rub effect and that the legal pick place.
Yeah, and I guess you see that a ton in college football these days, so nobody should be surprised. But if you're Jack Curtis, the defensive coordinator for Tulane, look, there's some pressure on him. There was an expectation that the defense was, because of the defensive line, going to be not just good, but really, really good this season. And there's been some tough moments. He was joking with me at practice one day. The way college football goes these days, he's like, it's just not, we're playing basketball out there sometimes. And we want to be more than soccer, but less than basketball. It's a frustrating time to be a defensive coordinator. quite frankly, guys, I think you can look up the road to Blacksburg, Virginia, and think that's part of the reason Bud Foster's like, this is a mess out here. I'm a darn good defensive coordinator, and look what these guys are doing. I've won my games. I'm going to go hang out at Clater Lake outside of Blacksburg. It's hard to be a defensive coordinator these days. It really, really is. So I'll be interested to see the game plan they draw up.
One phase of the game we have not discussed thus far is the special teams. If I recall correctly, you have a pretty good kicker. So just talk about him and then also the return aspect.
Yeah, Ryan Wright is the punter. He's been incredibly consistent. I think he's first in the conference in punting average. He's not been, I suppose, perfect, but he's been certainly good. Merrick Glover is a good kicker. I wouldn't classify him as, you know, a Bajan Nichols over at Navy that can kind of win a game for you late with a 60-yard field goal. But Merrick Glover has been a consistent field goal kicker for Tulane, and probably anything inside 45 yards you feel pretty darn good about for Merrick Glover. Also, Amari Jones has been banged up, but he is back. He likely will not return punts for Tulane, so that's notable just in that running back spot. For Amari Jones, so Jaquan Jackson will take those duties, probably both on kickoffs and punts. He's awfully good. He's a sophomore. And then most notably, Bubba, as you ask about special teams, is the fact that earlier in the season, Tulane was struggling with kickoff coverages. I think when there was like 75 teams that were playing, Tulane was ranking 64th in kickoff coverages. That's incredibly atypical for Willie Fritz, who spends a lot of time working with the special teams, right? He empowers his offensive coordinator, he empowers his defensive coordinator, and he spends some time with the special teams. So the fact that they struggled was out of character. And I will say they have shored that part of the game up big time. I think they're now like 30th in the country when it comes to kickoff return coverage. So they have corrected that issue. Overall, Tulane is a pretty good team when it comes to special teams.
Should be a tremendous game. Jay, did you have anything else for Andrew before we wrap this up?
No, good talk with you, Andrew.
Really appreciate the visit, Andrew, and have an excellent call. Like you said, unfortunately, you'll be doing this from afar down in New Orleans, very much like Jeff Charles and the Pirate IMD Network has been broadcasting. Nonetheless, have an excellent call, and tell folks if they want to hear the opposing call and how they can tune in, because I believe you guys are on TuneIn Radio, correct?
We are in TuneIn Radio. As always, it's not difficult. Just download the TuneIn Radio app. All you have to do, it's free. You can go to the Tulane Sports Network, and you can pull up our broadcast. I believe we're on Sirius XM this week as well. I don't have the station, but for folks that have satellite radio, you can check out the schedule. I believe we are there as well. But, you know, listen to Jeff Charles, because he calls a darn good game as well. Or listen to Jay. I hear he's a great color commentator.
All right. Great Pirate preview. A great interview there. Andrew Allegretta from the play-by-play voice of the Tulane Green Wave guys. We're recorded that yesterday afternoon. Any changes in your mind as far as the game? I'm feeling a lot better, certainly this end of the week, than I was maybe Sunday or Monday. I think one of the great things Coach Houston said is you wonder about how well a team will respond. He truly, I think, was sincere when he said they had a great week at practice. And then you look at the Pirates now. I think that they're going to respond you can look at it two ways, that it'll be emotional, where they have a lot of penalties, a lot of mistakes. But I think this team is not going to be flat. I think this team is going to be fired up. They know they won that game, and they should have won that Navy game. It should be three games in a row they've won. So, guys, I feel good about the game on Saturday at high noon.
Yeah, I do think there are, you know, some matchup situations that favor Tulane. But like I said, sometimes you're just due. And, you know, maybe it's time for maybe it's time for old C.J. Johnson he talked about some trouble in the passing game with the defending the pass with the vertical ball. You know, Adi Abatasho made some plays last week, and, yep. You know, C.J. Johnson's had his spots, but C.J. hadn't had that game yet this year, so maybe this is the week old C.J. lights it up and has a field day against the Tulane secondary.
No question about it.
That's something I thought about, Kyle, when I heard Andrew and just the stuff I had read elsewhere as far as Lane pass defense. I think, hey, maybe this is the week that C.J. Johnson has, seven, eight catches and 100-plus yards.
Yeah, it would be the time to do it. We need to win this one just because of what's happened the last couple of weeks. Guys, have we discussed the news that came out today about the Marshall situation?
We know I was saving that on purpose, Kyle, to this point. So nice segue there, Mr. Barber. That's why they call you Kyle from LaGrange. I was going to pitch it to you. I know that you and I, we had a group text earlier about that. Can you, the details came out this afternoon about that, and I'll pitch it to you, Kyle, for, I know this is a game. We'll preface by saying that it was going to be a week zero game. It was going to be obviously November 14th. Coming up as a 50th anniversary, a really big splash, of course, with COVID, pushed the game back, and then they postponed it. And, Kyle, now what's the news today?
Yeah, it's not going to be played. CUSA has made Marshall play Rice on December 5th. So Marshall is unable to play us. So the game won't happen. Coach, Athletic Director Sean Gilbert did say he anticipates playing a game December 5th. Said it's going to be a fluid situation. Don't want to schedule anything just yet in case we have to make up a conference game there. He said, if things fall right, he said he anticipates playing a game December 5th. So it sounds like he has an opponent in mind, and we're just waiting to make sure it can happen before we announce it. Bubba, did you take it that way from what you read? Did you read it also?
I actually have not had the opportunity to read it yet.
Well, you've had the opportunity. You just haven't taken it.
Yep, exactly.
Well, I had certainly
nothing else going on.
No, not at all. Obviously, it's a huge disappointment, guys. I think that, but the way that, isn't it perfect for 2020? That's all you have to say is 2020, because this Marshall game is a really big deal. For both programs, the 50th anniversary of the plane crash.
You know what, Dave? It is, but I think it's better. I'm assuming we're still going to go there next year, and I would assume that what's going to – this is, again, an assumption. I would assume that game's still going to be played just in another year. I'd rather play Marshall when we can pack that place. Even though this is the anniversary, it would still be 3,500 people. So I would much rather have Marshall in here when we can have 40 to 50,000 people in there, because that game's going to draw no matter when it's played. So let's play them another year. You know, we'll go up there next year, and then they can come here several years down the road. What I'm excited about is Gilbert seemingly willing to schedule another game December 5th. I don't know what the determining factor is going to be with that, if it's going to be based on our record or what, but it certainly sounds like he's willing, and that there's something out there that he's eyeing. If I interpreted the statement correctly.
Well, you guys, if you think about it too, is that the very fact if somehow you could win on Saturday, there's winnable games still in the schedule. And I feel like that, and maybe we can steal one of the games like we talked about, Kyle. Maybe, who knows, the Cincinnati game or the last game of the season, SMU, which – both of them are really good teams, but maybe you could steal one of those games, get red hot, win a few games, and then you have the game December 4th. Maybe you could be, 4-6 on the year? And
it depends. If we can win Saturday, let's just say we win Saturday. And then let's say we beat Temple. And then let's say we upset SMU. Well, guess what? Then you're playing that whatever game it is December 5th for 500 for 5-5. Yeah. Let's say we lose Saturday, but we beat Temple and we beat SMU. Then you're playing for win number 4, and you'd be 4-6. So I mean, either way, I think it's worth playing December 5th no matter what the record is, because even if we're sitting there with one win, two wins is better than one. So it'll be interesting to see how how it plays out, and who we end up playing, and if we end up playing. But it certainly sounds like Gilbert is willing to play a game on the 5th.
Yeah, there's no question that that game is it'll be. And let me ask you guys. I think I know the answer, but I'm going to ask Jay. We'll ask you, throw it around the table, so to speak. Do you play a FCS opponent? Do you play a FBS opponent that you think you can win? I would assume that there's some games out there, some teams out there would love to have a game. What would you guys do? I would assume an FCS opponent.
Well, yes, unless it's a situation where you can get a UMass cheaper than an FCS. They went to Georgia State for Georgia Southern for $60,000. So,
what?
Yeah. So an FCS wow. or UMass would be something you know you can win. Granted, you never know what's going to happen, but I would like, if we schedule a game on December 5th, I would like to look at it and think we should win that game.
Right. It's basically what it comes down to with this crazy schedule. It's more like the December 5th game is more like the Labor Day game, the warm-up game you have at the beginning of the season to get the season off right, the FCS opponent we've talked about with what you would like for your schedule, and now it's the reverse. You have at the end of the season because you, that would help you with your win totals, and really there'd be, if you have 3-4, I would even say, people think I'm crazy, I think 3-7 you could take a bowl bid. If you have an offer, take it.
What do you think, Bob, with you FCS?
I was looking at some possibilities.
Western Carolina's out there.
Yeah, that's a possibility. I was looking.
What about Campbell? Have they done? I know they talked about playing.
They're finished.
I was looking at UMass. Kyle, you're talking about UMass, and they, funny enough, play Marshall. They're going against the 16th ranked Herd this weekend, and they are 44.5 point underdogs.
Or I'm assuming they're open on December 5th.
Yeah. And I was also checking Coastal Carolina and Liberty. They play each other on December 5th.
Yeah.
Coastal Carolina. Hey, I got a question.
Conway.
Can we play UConn on December 5th?
Hey, I don't know if UConn's going to play a game. I heard they might play UMass and play one game. Maybe ODU wants to play just one game.
Yeah. Yeah. There you go.
Randy Edsel will get a huge bonus for going undefeated 1-0.
That's right. The way his contract's written, you may be right. I got another one thrown at you guys. What if you're sitting there with 4 wins? I mean, Grant, we got to get a lot of wins to get 4 wins, right?
Yeah.
Right. What if you're sitting there with 4 wins? And do you dare schedule a game the 5th and 12th, 2 FCS opponents, to get to 6 wins?
I think if under normal circumstance, normal years, you would only be able to get 1 anyway. But I think with 4 wins, if you had the 1, would be 5-5. And 5 wins, believe it or not, 500 of 5-5 will get you to a bowl game. So
yeah,
the only way you guarantee
yourself a winning season.
Well, not only that, but here's another question I'll throw at you, Kyle. Now that you brought that up,
it's not going to happen. I'm just.
I don't. No, but the reason I was going to chime in on that to add to your point, what if this is all about pecking order, meaning that if you get the 6-5 and they allow the 2, your chances of playing a bowl game obviously are better at 6-5 than if you have the 4 wins, right? I mean, I would think, but. Who knows?
I guess it depends on how the conference is going to do it. It'll be interesting to see. Guys, would you, let's say things don't fall our way, and we're sitting there with 2 wins at the end of the year, or God forbid 1, but we'll say 2. Let's say we're sitting there with 2 wins at the end of the year. Would you still play it and try to get to 3? I would, because
yeah.
To me, 3-7 sounds better than 2-7.
I definitely would. I think the Pirates are, I think that, when our friend Terry Gallagher, former wide receiver of the Pat Dyer era, said this is a long spring football with the extra year of eligibility. It's been such a crazy year. Having that extra game is kind of like having a bowl game anyway, where you will get another week of practice and I mean, who knows that the way crazy things would have to fall, I would think, as far as there's going to be a number of teams before you. But even with even at 3-7, we might be able to go.
Yeah,
I think it's
going to depend as far as the bowl discussion goes. What is going to depend on, you know, like you got MAC schools. They're only playing six games. You know, so to me, a 3-3 MAC school, you only played six games. Give me a break.
Because, yeah, I agree with that.
So are they going to be looked at the same as us? You know, they still have their bowl ties. Are there going to be some conferences that go, you know what, we're not going to play bowl games? Are there going to be some schools that are just going to go, you know what, even though we had a winning record, we're not playing bowl games. We're putting the season to bed. You know, that's going to be interesting to see how all that plays out. You still have your bowl contracts with these conferences. The MAC and, you know, the Mountain West, et cetera, they're playing football now, and they still have bowls that they're contracted to. How's all that going to work? You know, I'm really interested to see, are all these teams going to, are all these conferences going to play bowls? And are all the teams in the conference going to play bowls?
Yeah, Kyle, you brought up Western Carolina. Looking at their schedule, they play at Liberty on November 14th, then at EKU on November 21st, and then December 11th, which is a Friday night, they play at North Carolina. So,
yeah.
Would they play us 6 days before playing the Tar Heels?
Well, you know what, you could play them. You could play them Thursday night. You could play them Friday night. That way, you could give them exactly a week. For some reason, you know, we couldn't do that. Maybe as you know, Chattanooga's available. UTC. I know they were trying to schedule some games. I know Nebraska had scheduled them. To make up for their game that they had lost to Wisconsin. And then the Big Ten said, no, you can't do that. So you might want to check UTC and see if they have anything scheduled because they could play four. And I know they were still looking for games.
It's going to be a lot of fun. I mean, to guess the December 5th game and maybe they don't schedule a game. But I really believe that Coach Houston would schedule that game knowing that think about all the guys, the experience, the game experience of a Rajay Harris, obviously with a lot of the true freshmen, redshirt freshmen. There's so many young guys, 54 new players on the team this year. There's so many reasons. And that's why if you're 3-7, 4-6, you got to play. If you're allowed to play a bowl game, as starved as this fan base is, but more importantly than even the fans, the extra practices, I mean, that's why I really believe that I think the threshold I would say is 4-6, 5-5 for us to, but 4-6 will be where you have to go to a bowl. I mean, maybe some people would say 3-7, you don't go, but we're not in the position to be choosy. And also the fact that
I'll tell you this, if the American wants to make up for that BS that happened in Tulsa. How about if a team with a losing record from the American gets to go to a bowl that is East Carolina? How about that, American? You want to make up for that Tulsa game? How about if one team from the American gets to go to a bowl with a losing record, you make sure it's the Pirates?
And that's totally fair because, you know, and the reality is we won that game. We really should be sitting at least two wins on the win column.
Yeah, and if you look back at the Navy game, I mean, think about if we were sitting here with three wins. Man. I mean, we would really be talking about that December 5th game. Hey, guys, if we were sitting here with three wins, you know that December 5th game would be playing for 500 just about at least.
Yep.
Think about that. Think about that. We would be sitting here going, guys, as long as we win one more game, you get an FCS opponent in here December 5th for
absolutely.
500.
So, absolutely. No doubt about it. It's I know, Brent.
Can you imagine what it would be like this week? I'm getting ready to talk about our fourth straight victory and going to 4-1 in the American.
Oh, we would be talking about competing for second place in the conference, Bubba. That would be the talk right now. Nobody's even talking about that. Had we won these last 2 weeks, the talk right now with Cincinnati and SMU still on the schedule, we would be talking about trying to work our way into the championship game.
Wow. That's amazing how, and I hadn't thought about it, that how close we really are when you put it in that perspective. But, wow, that's a good point. Jay, I tell you, with the game on the line on Saturday, How much time do you put in as far as preparation? And then how much time as far as preparation? And I asked you beforehand, but I wanted people to know that you're not going to be just showing up at the stadium with a police escort at 11:30.
Yeah, no. I miss those police escort days, though. Those are nice when you're playing and, you know, they block off all the roads and there's no traffic. But for preparation, yeah, I've watched about 8 games, 4 apiece so far for both teams. And, you know, get the boards together with the 2 deeps for both teams, make sure we have all the stats and all the storylines, and talk to the coaches and listen to the conference calls. So there's a lot, you know, a lot of research and a lot of studying going on into it. But I'll tell you, the sports administration staff, the SIDs, Tom Simons and Tom McClellan at East Carolina, have both been outstanding. And there's so many people behind the scenes that go into the broadcast that give you all the information and help out to make it, you know, to make it as good as possible. So it's so appreciative, you know, for all the people that help out.
Can you do me one favor?
Hold on 1 second, Dave. Who scheduled you to call this game? Was it ESPN or East Carolina?
It's ESPN. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
That's awesome. I was going to make sure that all the broadcasters know 2 things. It's East Carolina University. And another thing is, that's the most important thing. The second most important thing, Rajay Harris.
Yeah. I know. I've been practicing that this week to make sure I've got the pronunciation down.
What is that, for East Carolina or for Rajay?
He's got the J in there, so I just got to say Ra, you know, first.
If Jay calls us Eastern Carolina, I swear to God.
Oh, my God.
Don't you guys worry. I won't do it.
Well, hey, Jay, we'll throw a flag on you for sure.
Yeah. Kick me out. Kick me out of the stadium.
He's going to be suspended. We're going to make sure Jay's suspended for 1 broadcast at least.
Reprimanded. Hey,
and then Coach Houston, I guess it was either his radio show on Monday night or the press conference Tuesday, he slipped up and said Roger.
Yeah, he did. I think Ron Bailey corrected him on it. Hey, Jay, can you get in a Sports Objective shout-out on the broadcast?
I'm going to give you guys a shout-out. What do you want me to say?
Say, listen to the Sports Objective.
I'll say hey to you guys. I'm going to say, hey, Bubba, Dave, Kyle.
All right, go ahead. Do it.
You know how you guys
are say, too young. The crew at the Sports Objective, listen to us. It's the best podcast on the air.
I will.
Well, Carol Burnett, the Carol Burnett show, she used to, at the very end of her show, you should just do like grab her earlobe. Maybe you can do something like that, so we would know that you're talking to us and saying,
"I'll give you guys a signal." Yeah,
grab your earlobe while you're calling the game. Nobody can see you, but just grab your earlobe.
I'll do like a baseball signal, you know, like on the third base. No, they're doing an indicator.
I'd rather just say, "Listen to the Sports Objective."
I'll see what I can do. I'll see if we get something in there in the second quarter.
We're going to actually sneak Kyle into the Town Bank Tower and have you come in and sit in the broadcast. I'm sure he can go a whole game without cheering for the team or dropping some F-bombs or MFs. Or
I can go the whole game without dropping an F-bomb.
Hey, Dave, you know the situation with the elevator up to Town Bank Tower, you know how it's 2 people, right? You know, from the media?
Yeah.
I wonder if it's the same for the public. You could have Kyle and Kieran Shanahan, and those are the 2 people in the elevator.
Yeah, I've had that happen. He didn't know who I was, but yeah. I was actually – it was for homecoming last year, and Mike Oresco was there, and I was running a little tight – not real bad on – I was early, about 15 minutes, but still it was closer than I thought, and I was trying to get up there, and I looked, and he said, "Oh, yeah, we built this for you. I guess you like it better now." And I looked and it was him. And I was like, okay, I don't want to embarrass my mom and dad right now. So I just smiled and I didn't say anything. But I know, Kyle, would you have talked to Kieran, your buddy?
Yeah, if he would have said, "We built this for you," referring to the media, I would have said, "Yeah, you bankrupted us." that's my response to old Karen Shanahan.
Oh, you know, I thought you were going
to say, Kyle, who else can we hire, Kyle?
I don't know. Bubba, it's a great question. Who else can we hire? What a clown. What a complete clown. You know, I know his name is Kieran, but I like to call him Karen. And Karen's become a thing now, you know. That's the new thing. It's somebody is like a overdramatic white chick. She's a Karen. So, you know, I like that. You know, his name is Karen. Karen Shanahan.
Well, we were the greatest podcast of the Pirates.
We still are. Hey, if you don't like it, Karen, sue the sports executive. Dave's copyrighted it.
Sue me. We've heard that before. Sue me. Jay, let's get back on the rails. I do love Kyle with all my heart. He's hilarious. But as far as the game is concerned, when you're looking at the one thing that I was going to say, guys, is I know we talked a great deal about their special teams, but I think our special teams with Jake Verity, there was a question about John Young, but John actually, Coach Houston said tonight on his press conference, if for those who didn't watch it or listen to it, the very fact that that John was hurt, he had some injuries. So it'll be interesting to see how who starts it as that's going to be one of the question marks.
Is Young out? Is he out?
Houston wouldn't say if it was going to be both of them playing, which is interesting. You know how we always joke about running back by committee? I was thinking about that earlier tonight. We have punters by committee.
So are we going to see the Aussie? Are we going to see the rugby kicking?
Possibly both of them, yeah.
All right.
Hey, but you know what? That actually is a good thing because how many people could say that they have multiple punters that we're even in the punter room, we're great.
I haven't seen the Aussie kick, but you know, let's hope. Hopefully he
played last week.
Hopefully he'll get off adequate punts.
Yeah, he played last week.
Did he play last week?
Yeah, he had three punts. Yeah, Young didn't start last week. He was Coach Houston said tonight he was the.
I didn't notice.
He didn't. Well, I know those numbers couldn't be right because against Tulsa, I think we only punted twice.
That's correct. That's correct. And only two punts. And John Young
he held punted three times.
Yeah, but anyway. having fun here tonight. Hey, let's do our predictions. Jay, are you going to go? Do you want to sit out since you're?
Yeah, I probably have to sit out.
Yeah, I figured so. Kyle, I'll start with you.
Man, I hope we win this one. I really do. I'm going to say it goes to overtime. Jay, get ready, baby. You're going to call an overtime game in Daddy Picklin. Stay Parkland.
I'll be ready.
I'm going to say. Say East Carolina 37, Tulane 34. Pirates win it in overtime.
Woo! How about you, Bubba?
I will go East Carolina 41 and Tulane 31.
Oh, nice. I hope you're right.
I'm going Pirates 45, and I'm going with Tulane 38. I think it's going to be a touchdown. We're going to win by a touchdown is what I'm – that's my gut feeling, so I'm going to stick with my gut, a touchdown, and I think we're going to – Kyle's been talking about that game, and one of our mutual friends – I won't say who he is, Kyle, but one of our mutual friends said that you were right on this game and that this is going to be the game where the Pirates score a lot of points and win the game. So I'll go with – I'll trust
right
him.
This game.
Yeah, in other words, he thinks that this is going to be the game that the Pirates break out and score a lot of points.
I know who you're talking about. And it would be nice if it's this game. I got a feeling it's going to be the SMU game if that happens. But
hey,
if this game, I'll take it.
That's fine. Whichever one. That means they can win however we get it. Yeah, we'll take it anyway we get it. Want to mention a few other things, odds and ends, real quick before we get out of here. Hey, give a shout out, guys, to HV3 Bubba. I don't know if we had a chance to tell you, Kyle, but HV3, a big day this afternoon. What was that called again? Is it the Vivint Houston Open?
That is correct. The Vivint Houston Open. And that's what HV3 shot 3 under, 67. And he is in a 6-way tie for second place behind. Brant Snedeker, who shot 5 under at a 65.
And, you know, guys, Kyle, I know you said a couple times, somebody's due. Don't you think HV3 is due to win? He's, above 120th in the world? But he's been so close so many times here of late. the last year or so that he's actually made me watch more than the majors and the PGA. I've got somebody to really root for really hard to be a great pirate like HV3.
Yeah, Harold's put himself in position a lot going into the weekend, but and maybe even a few times going into the final round, but just hasn't been able to make enough shots on the weekend. But hopefully it's going to happen soon. I definitely think Harold will get into the winner's circle sooner rather than later.
Yeah. I'm not a golf guy, but support HV3. He's a pirate. So hopefully he'll get it done and keep chipping away and get some wins. I know nothing about golf, guys.
Hey, hey, Bubba, how cool would it be with maybe we'll take Kyle on another road trip to Augusta. How cool would it be to be at the Masters and you get a chance to be at the Masters and HV3 gets that green jacket? Would that not be like, I would be out of my mind. I would be like, probably like Kyle, be yelling really loud and being not the proper golf etiquette. But that would be, wouldn't that be awesome?
I'd have to give me a purple jacket with the Masters logo.
Good point. Good point. Another thing, Bubba, what about with the Pirate Club, the Pirate Chase race? I know they had to change it because of obviously COVID stuff to it's a fundraiser for the Pirates. And I want to give a shout out to them because it's going to start on Saturday. And it, basically what it is, you have to keep up with your stats between now and the 21st. So 2 weeks, you can do a 10K, you can do a 5K. And they also have a 1 mile fun run. I think I could do that. 1 mile for two, take me 2 weeks to do it.
Yeah. And for more information, you can visit www.piratechaseracefest.com. Like you said, November 7th to the 21st, a 5K, 10K, or 1 mile fun run. It's for the 5K and 10K, $25. And then the 1 mile fun run, $10. It says the 2020 Pirate Chase Race Fest will take place virtually on those dates. All proceeds from this race benefit ECU student athlete scholarships. Each participant will receive a t-shirt after completion of the event.
Come on, Kyle. Can you do the fun run with me?
Well, if it's all virtual and we're just saying we did it, sure.
How about if I drive you a mile?
Hell, I just ran a mile. I just ran a mile, guys. Done. Just did it.
I was going to pencil roll a mile.
I'm gonna do something for a mile, but
we'll video. We'll put it on the Sports Objective.
That would.
Let me tell you,
Bubba.
If y'all ever see me running a mile, please help me because something's chasing me.
That would be awesome. That would be awesome. You're right, Bubba. We can put that on YouTube, our YouTube channel. That will be epic, man. You see Kyle running a mile.
Look, dude.
Or rolling a mile.
Look, I get it. I'm fat. If you guys, either one of you think,
hey no, I'm running a mile. Kyle, that's not the reason I said roll. I'm talking about, Greg McElroy. I know he talked about having to do it when he was at Alabama. He was late for a meeting prior to their game with Tennessee.
I would rather roll a mile.
And he had to roll something like, I don't know, 600, 700, 800 yards the following week in practice. So that was right there, obviously approaching a half a mile.
Why is that hard?
Rolling? Just
rolling? I mean, why would that be hard?
I would rather run it.
Yeah, I know it doesn't sound hard, but just wait.
That's 8 football fields, man. 8 football fields.
And after a while, we've had players do it in the past, and they'll start rolling sideways. They'll roll negative 30 or 40 yards, and then then they're rolling, 40 more where they started.
Jay,
You're talking about rolling from side to side, right? Not doing cartwheels, not doing front rolls, right?
I'm talking about lying down on the ground horizontally
and rolling like a log.
Yes, I'm not talking about
a front roll. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not talking about, a somersault or.
I don't know about 8 football fields, but I'll tell you what, if I had the choice between running a football field and rolling a football field, I would take rolling the football field.
No way. It's worse, dude. I'm telling you, it's worse. You could definitely run.
I'm telling you right now, I am 400 pounds, ladies, and I have two bad knees. And if you think I'm running the football field, you can kiss my ass. I'm going to roll it.
So if the Pirates lose, are you going to run the football field this week? Are you going to take a bet with us?
Run it? No, I'll roll it. Y'all run it. I will roll it.
Can we talk about Ryan Hague? We cannot get on the field. But last year, that was one of the things you could go on the field after the game because we actually went on the field after the Tulsa game last year just because Riley wanted to go. But I don't know. I think next year, if that's still a thing in 2021, I say we go on the field after the first game, and we'll get footage of Kyle rolling 100 yards for our Facebook page.
Look, I'm not telling you I want to roll 100 yards. I'm telling you if you tell me I have to run 100 yards or roll 100 yards, I'm going to take roll 100 yards.
I think what we should do is reverse.
I could not run 100 yards. I couldn't do it. My fat ass would give out. I'd give out of breath. My kneecaps would pop out of place. I'm telling you, in the shape I'm in right now, you know, I'm a big boy. I could not run 100 yards. I couldn't do it. Maybe I'm underestimating this rolling thing. But
Dave,
let me ask you a question. How many times have you rolled? I mean, you're saying like you're talking about this from experience. When you were playing football, Dave, did you get out there and do rolling drills?
I didn't, but I can tell you that it's
like. Have you ever rolled in any sort of athletic way?
I rolled down hills even as a teenager, but not like rolling 100 yards on a football field.
So how do you know it's harder?
Because I can run 100 yards. I won't be the fastest guy, but I can definitely run 100 yards a lot faster than rolling 100 yards.
I didn't say faster. I'm saying which one would be easier. Which one could I do without killing myself?
You would be surprised. You could do a lot better running than you can rolling, I bet you.
Okay.
It's a lot harder than you. I still say I've never done it, but it looked in my mind, just envisioning it, that if you're talking about end zone or, you know, end zone to end zone, 100 yards.
It'll be slow. It'll be slow and methodical, but it'll be easier.
Okay. So it's not a time. So we don't have Bubba. Do we need a time limit on this? Can you and Corey Glory can call it. We can have you on there and do the YouTube channel and have both of you doing commentary on will Kyle do it. He's at the 20. He's at the 25. He's at the 30, the 35, the 40, the 45, the 50.
I've had to do like wheelbarrow stuff. And the tough thing about it is I would feel his pain. So I don't wish that upon anybody. So it would be tough.
So just rolling like a log, right? You know, down a field, Jay, you're saying as an experienced Division I football player, you think that's like tougher than running?
Well, it depends. If you have to do 200 sprints, I'd say that's worse.
Yeah.
But the rolling thing is only bad if you have to do it like a lot. So, I mean, right. Give me two.
So, if I was given 15 minutes to roll 100 yards, no problem, right?
Oh, no problem.
That's what I'm thinking. All right. Thank you.
But if you had to roll for 15 minutes continuously, that's terrible.
Right.
But exactly.
I'm given 15 minutes to roll 100 yards.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, you can roll 10 yards every 2 minutes or whatever the math is.
Yeah.
I've got faith in you.
I'd rather do that than run. I mean, maybe I'm wrong.
Well, how far would you run, though?
100 yards.
Just run?
Yeah.
For 15, well, how long would it take you to run?
Wait a minute. Now, I'm giving 15 minutes to run it all. Well, hell, if I'm giving 15 minutes to run it also, I may do that then. Because I can just run 5 yards, stop, drink some Gatorade, and sit down, and then start back.
And speaking of which, I know we got to get out of here. Another topic. Did we talk about the Pepsi deal that was last week?
No, we didn't. But Minji's, East Carolina re-signed with Minji's. Pepsi won the bidding war over Coke, and starting next year will be the official soft drink of the Pirates again. And the only soft drink, I guess, that's sold on campus at sporting events, et cetera. So back to tradition. And Dave, I guess, do you have the basketball schedule in front of you for non-conference?
No, I know Bubba does. We're going to talk about
it right here.
Okay, good. That was good. That was my next thing. Because when you said Gatorade, I knew we didn't mention that. So I wanted to, we're going to have Gatorade on the sideline starting next year. So Bubba, what about the bubble? The bubble tournament?
The beach bubble.
Beach bubble. A beach bubble. I got used to saying that.
We'll start off with the beach bubble, which is the tournament, the Gulf Coast Showcase that is taking place down in Florida, where the Pirates will be starting their season in Fort Myers. Pirates get the nightcap on day one, November 25th, which is a Wednesday night, 8 o'clock against the Sycamores of Indiana State, Larry Bird's alma mater. And if the Pirates are victorious, then they would play the winner of either Omaha or Austin Peay. And Austin the governors are actually very good. So it would, if we beat Indiana State, it would probably be Austin Peay that we would meet in the semifinals. And then on the other side of the bracket, you have East Tennessee State. Obviously, the Bucks won 30 games a season ago. I do think they lost a significant amount off that team. But they're taking on Abilene Christian. And then also Akron out of the MAC is playing Conference USA's Middle Tennessee Blue Raiders. And then also on the basketball scheduling front, we will play four home games this year. And those four home games are going to be James Madison, UNC Wilmington, Radford, and University of North Florida.
And so we have three games, though, in that tournament we're going to play. Right. Indiana State, and then somebody else, and then somebody else.
Right. And game two would either be Omaha or Austin Peay. And then,
okay. Hey, guys, I'm on a 2% battery, and
all right.
I'm away from my charger, so I got a crutch over there. But I may die here in a minute.
All right.
Jay, we will say goodbye to you right now and let you charge your phone. And good luck Saturday as you hopefully are calling the Pirate victory.
Yeah, guys, thanks so much. Seriously, I appreciate having me on. It's going to be so much fun. So look forward to talking to you guys after the game next week, hopefully.
Yeah, you can say the Pirate. We'll know you're talking about us when you say, everybody, every Pirate fan, I wish you could be here so you could roll up and down the 100 yards for Dowdy Picklin Stadium. We'll know you're talking about the sports objective.
the 100-yard challenge.
There you go.
Sounds good. All right, guys. All right, thanks, man. So much.
Okay. See you, buddy. All right, bye. All right, Jay Sunhalter. Very excited for him on ESPN Plus. That'll be on Saturday high noon. And talking about the Pirates, Bubba, I know you were given the schedule. It's going to be a lot of fun, right? Non-conference?
Yep. 27 games overall, and then those seven non-conference games that you mentioned. So when it's all said and done, the Pirates will hopefully play, barring COVID setbacks, 14 games at Minji's, and then 10 on the road, and then three neutral court games down in Fort Myers.
Hey, when does conference play start? Do we know? Because the last non-conference
game is
December. Huh?
They're actually going to start it early. There's two different sets of conference games in December, right, Bubba?
Right. According to Coach Dooley, the latest is apparently all teams are going to attempt to play at least two conference games in December.
Okay, because our last non-conference game is December 19th, that's why I asked.
Yeah, and that would be good. That'll be good, too. And the other thing that they're proposing, I think we talked about, is the fact that if you have Cincinnati, then if we went to Cincinnati, we'd play the two games there at Cincinnati, or it could be Tulane coming here, we'd play two games here. Almost like if it's baseball, the way I equate it, it's like having a series where you have two or three games like you do for baseball. It would be like that for basketball, trying to limit the travel and limit the number of, you know, obviously, I guess, interactions there between teams and all that. So,
Coach Dooley said that's not going to happen.
Oh, it's not? Okay. Okay. I know they
seemed like it would have been cost saving also Seems like a good idea.
That's an idea that's still being tossed around with several other conferences, but I'm positive. I heard Coach Dooley say that that idea has been tossed out by the American. So, not that it couldn't change, but he did say that. But one of the things, Dave, I know we wanted to promote is some Division I basketball preview for the state of North Carolina and Tim Kraft at Gardner Webb. He's one of the first we talked to, actually the very first we talked to, and he talked about the way the Big South is doing it in terms of scheduling.
Yeah, that's going to be great. I appreciate your hard work on that, Bubba. 18 programs in Division I. We did that for obviously baseball, Kyle and Bubba, and now we're doing basketball, which is fantastic, along around the state of North Carolina. So we'll take trips. It could be a beat writer, it could be a coach, play-by-play voice, but we're going to cover all 18 schools, and we'll have that to you in the next, let's see, doing my math, the next 10 days or so. So that'll be a lot of fun. And then what we have that coming up, I know we're going to try to do a Pirate preview. We'll have that. We also have all kinds of great stuff, including we'll have our normal stuff as far as football season is concerned. And then it's hard to believe, but basketball season will be, like you said, around the 25th. So we'll have some stuff around the Beach Bubble tournament and stuff like that. And the overtime, right, Bubba?
Yeah. And like you're saying, we'll hopefully talk to some folks from Indiana State, and then and we'll preview what takes place or is going to take place down in Fort Myers, as well as post game with over.
That'll be fantastic. So we got a lot of stuff coming up. We got the Pirate preview. We'll obviously have before we forget too, we have the Inside Slant to talk about, Bubba.
Yeah, I'm taking a look at Boise State and BYU, and then also Liberty playing their first game as a ranked team, going on the road to play just their second game ever against Virginia Tech, and also get the perspective of Palmer Toms from Dogs 24/7 on the world's largest outdoor cocktail party taking place in Jacksonville, and also Will Vandervoort from the Clemson Insider about number one Clemson traveling without Trevor Lawrence to take on number four Notre Dame in South Bend, 7:30 on NBC Saturday night.
It's going to be fantastic, and we'll have that out as soon as we can tonight or tomorrow for sure. And then our Pirate playback will be coming up sometime after the game. All right, guys, thanks to Andrew Allegretta, and, of course, Jake Sonhalter has got the game on Saturday at high noon on ESPN Plus. Good luck to the Pirates. Any final words, Kyle, before we go?
Just go Pirates. Hopefully we can find a way to win the game Saturday. We need a W.
All right, Bubba, before we go, anything before we go?
Go Pirates.
All right, sounds good. All right, guys, good luck to the Pirates. We'll have all the great coverage. In the meantime, you've been watching and listening to the Pirate Preview right here on the Sports Objective. Good night, everybody. Go Pirates.